The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Sean Kelly, who is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly, former CISO at EPA and former Deputy CIO at Veterans Affairs on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Cyber Chat, where government leaders come to discuss the hottest cyber topics affecting us today. Now your host, Sean Kelly.
Today I'm speaking with Mr. Charles Sun, government executive and IPv6 expert. Charles, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Sean, for inviting me for your show. It's a great show. Today I'm speaking in my personal capacity and not representing any agencies. What I'm said is all personal opinions. And it does not necessarily represent those of the U.S. government.
Thank you. Charles, infrastructure, cybersecurity, it's really hard to separate the two from each other, right? And you have written and spoken a great deal about modernization and cybersecurity and how those two come together. What are your initial thoughts on how we be successful in the new infrastructure world in cybersecurity?
That's a great question, Sean. And I have been writing articles, personal opinion articles, related to cybersecurity and also related on IPv6, and they are intertwined from my personal perspective. In terms of the overall infrastructure and the overall cyber state, cybersecurity and the current state of cybersecurity, my personal opinion is that the very fact that your network, your infrastructure, do not has a reported data breach does not mean your network is secured. In other words, we are facing a challenge that on a daily basis, attacks of large scale all over the world based on 2018 Verizon data breach report. This is based on the data collected worldwide. There are on average more than 6 confirmed data breaches every single day. That's more than 2,300 data breaches confirmed every single day last year. There are over 53,000 reported security incidents and breaches. Based on this current state of deployment in terms of security, IP, SAC, and especially the private and government website, when we're talking about HTTPS, the so-called secured encryption for your website, many agencies, many private sectors, they are not using the latest version of the TLS. A lot of places have SSL mentioned repeatedly, which has been retired or replaced by TLS. And on top of that, any version prior to 1.3 has been hacked. So from my personal perspective, it's a huge challenge for both public and private sectors to really take a different approach. How can we secure our infrastructure?
So you hit on a couple things. Well, you hit on a few things. First, your point's very clear that just because you haven't found the logs, the alarms haven't gone off, it doesn't mean that you haven't been breached. And so that at that point was well taken. The other part I think that I took from your comments was that if we're not operating with the most current versions, we're probably at risk.
That's very true. And that's a huge risk. Yeah. So for example, NIST 852, the special publication 852, the most latest version, revision 1 specifically address how to deploy TLS 1.3. In the document, specifically mentioned that only recommend the federal agencies have a policy or have a strategy to deploy TLS 1.3 by 2020.
But let me ask you this, though, because I think you raise a great point, right? Outside of the most current version. I mean, I think there are some things that we could talk about why organizations may not be up to the current version, but let's talk about data overload, okay? Because your comment of just because the alarms haven't gone off, you haven't seen the logs and all that, you may have still been breached. And so I think SIMs that were kind of heralded as the end-all be-all for network security and log management has fallen short. I don't think that has produced what everybody thought it was going to produce from a tool standpoint. I think that SOCs are being stood up, security operations centers are being stood up much more frequently, even at smaller agencies than I've ever seen in the past. How do we use infrastructure data to make informed decisions?
That's a great question, Sean. And all the tools, SOCs included, have to be reviewed, have to be managed by the human beings. And we have to have people, the human eyes, to watch on a lot of stuff. If we just somehow skip some of them, it may not capture everything. So in this perspective, my position has been, it's a given that we are confronted on a daily basis attacks from the state-sponsored bad actors and cyber criminals every single day, every day, around the clock. What we can do from a different perspective, personal opinion, is to address the issue how to reduce the overall attack vector or attack services. Specifically, when can we, either the federal government or the private sectors, or maybe the nation, the world in general, when to turn off the legacy IPv4. And it's a simple fact, and I've been mentioning this to many people on many different occasions since 2014. The very moment we turn off IPv4, we will achieve 100% reductions of all the attacks and the threats based on V4. That's a material fact. Mm-hmm. Given the fact that currently we are running dual stack mode of operations, of both IPv4 and the V6. And can you imagine that the security logs and the overall threat and attack services will double in a few years, according to one of the data projections using the data set from Google?
So let me capture that. So as I think I understand what you're saying is that because we're running dual stack, we're creating more and more logs that there's no way that we can manage all these logs together. And if we want to, one, reduce our threat vector, but also reduce the amount of data that we need to look at on a single day, every day, then we need to get down to one or the other. And IPv6 obviously is the most more secure and is the more scalable
TCP/IP protocol. Yes.
Yes.
And also sometimes it's a myth that simply deploying V6 stuff now means it will be more secure than V4. And again, NIST has a special publications to giving the guidance how to securely deploy IPv6. And the very fact that we deploy V6 does not mean V6 is more secure than V4. That's a myth. But the very fact that we will need more IP addresses, especially the commercial side, they are starting to paying IP addresses, IPv4 addresses. 4 years ago, we can still get /22, about over 1,000 IP addresses, IPv4 addresses for free, as long as you're registered with as a participant with the register.
My guest today is Mr. Charles Sun, government executive and IPv6 expert. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Ask the CIO, SLED Edition, the connection between federal, state, and local IT. Search CIO SLED on Federal News Network.
Welcome back to Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. My guest today is Mr. Charles Sun, government executive and IPv6 expert. Charles, before we went on break, we were talking about IPv6, IPv4. The transition doesn't necessarily mean more secure, right? It's going to be about implementation and implementing it correctly.
Yeah, correct.
We've seen over the last 5 or 6 years a huge uptick in the amount of equipment that was IPv6 ready. So what is the holdup of most organizations making the switch?
That's a very good question. I've been writing in personal capacities since 2014, address some of the issues related to that. Nowadays, if you're a Verizon mobile phone customer, 90% of Verizon 4G customers is using IPv6. And the IPv6 itself is an underlying infrastructure of the internet, the TCP/IP protocol, the next generation of TCP/IP protocol. Deploying the newer version of IP should be completely transparent to the end users. Throughout the years, when I'm talking to both the private and the public sectors, to the many companies and the leaders in this field, often they ask the question saying that, why do I need to deploy in V6? I have enough IP address and there's no customer demand for it. There's no market for it. My answer to them is that if you're thinking along that sort of train of thought, you may be on the wrong side of the whole discussions. The very fact that if we ask a regular consumer, a cell phone user, for example, what is the IP address on your phone? 99% of the time, people do not know. They do not know. They do not care. My question is, if the consumers do not know, do not care, how do you expect a customer coming to a network vendor to ask, or a cell phone carrier to ask a different version of IP? If I tell you, you are currently using IPv8, they may not know any difference. Mm-hmm. Because from the consumer perspective, it should be completely transparent.
But so I get it. And I don't doubt, I think we're in a complete agreement of where we're going, but I think that we still have a long way to go before we see the complete elimination of IPv4, version 4. So we still have a problem in an area that you have a great deal of knowledge in about, is we have to worry about network performance and we have to worry about cybersecurity in those environments, and every device creates a log. And so how do, you know, you work in the infrastructure world. How do you keep staff from getting overwhelmed by the enormous amount of logs in their environment? And what do you use to mitigate risk and improve compliance in those environments?
I think automation would be the ultimate goal. Yeah. And introducing by leverage AI, artificial intelligence, and maybe machine learning. And that may potentially help to, similarly like we're deploying the IDS, IPS. And if we can teach the machines to automatically tune in to specific attacks, or giving them specific programming to auto-tuning based on the threat we pre-configured, maybe we can reduce a lot of human involvement. And a lot of times, even when humans involved, the reactions will be slow. And the attack can be, if they programmed a script, the attack can be very fast. And my personal opinion, probably we have to leverage the emerging technologies to address some of the issues. Mm-hmm. On top of that, to reduce, first of all, the overall attack service, concentrate our limited resources to securely deploying a single stack of IPv6, then utilizing the available resources to make sure we can handle all attacks and the threats based on V6. And go from there. Instead of engaging the enemies on two battlegrounds, fighting two wars, mm-hmm. on IPv4 and V6, we should, it's a common sense to me, to concentrate our limited resources worldwide, mm-hmm. to tackle this very issue, which will be there for a long, long time, whether we migrate to the cloud, whether we keep them in our own data centers and the prem. And that's going to be an issue with us as long as we have a network.
You know, what I hear from you is that we need to clean up our environment, right? We need to get down to one stack, one protocol, and make sure. So do you know of any organizations, federal, government, private, whichever, that are already in that posture and doing it well?
Currently, very frankly, there are not many organizations doing that, but there are some organizations moving toward that direction. So this is a common knowledge, and there's a internet society, a state of a deployment, and a report based on last year's report. Quite a few carriers is already in the process of turning off IPv4, at least internally. And according to the report, T-Mobile is in the process of doing so. And Verizon, as I mentioned earlier, is already 90% of the users using V6. It's from the private sectors, it's, the cost is a major issue. Earlier, the previous segment I mentioned, 4 years ago, the over 1,000 IPv4 addresses cost basically nothing. And earlier this year, /24, the class C IPv4 address will cost over $4,000. Just imagine that when a company has a product or services will relying on IPv4 addresses. If you need 1 million IP addresses, that before you even product take off, you will need to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to buying IP addresses. This is a reality. And you mentioned about examples. So many years ago, this is also public information, that Facebook internally, all Facebook data centers, I was told or I learned that it's using IPv6. And companies like Facebook, they do not have a lot of IPv4 addresses to start with. And Google, according to the recent report, is also in the process of enable IPv6 only within the data centers. Mm-hmm. It would be a huge challenge, especially for a lot of cloud service providers.
Yeah.
When we build a lot of data centers worldwide, they need a lot of IP addresses. I think the best approach or the smart approach to deal with that issue is to deploy V6, V6 only, instead of going around the globe buying IPv4 addresses like some companies did previously.
No, I agree. Let me go on breaking in. Let's talk about some things that we could do before we get there. My guest today is Mr. Charles Sun, government executive and IPv6 expert. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
News impacting feds and contractors, plus Mike Causey's unique perspective on pay, benefits, and retirement. Subscribe to the Morning Federal Report at Federal News Network.
Welcome back to Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. My guest today is Mr. Charles Sun, government executive and IPv6 expert. Charles, before we went on break, we were talking about the IPv4 running out and some of the problems that's causing. And I think we should mention that IPv6, partly, not completely, was created because we're running out of internet addresses, and we have. Now it's a recapture of addresses if you want a new one. But the world that our listeners live in right now is they're probably still looking at 5, 6, 7, maybe even more years before they see the elimination of Internet Protocol version 4, IPv4. So what do we do? How can we, you know, our tools, you mentioned IDSs and IPSs, we have firewalls, and we're talking about security in depth, right? But again, each one of those creates a log. So what can we do to make our infrastructure more secure?
That's a very good question. I always have the position that in order to achieve that ultimate goal of a single stack of IPv6, reducing more than 50% of the overall attack services, the private sectors, especially the networking security appliances, devices, software vendors, have to do more. In other words, they have to ensure that their product and services will fully support the full feature set of IPv6. They need to make sure that whatever we have now based on the IPv4 for in terms of the product features and services, they need to make sure that is made available way ahead of the game before everybody can start to feel comfortably to deploying IPv6, feel that they have the tools and to protect them. So one of the major issues of deploying V6 is that, especially in the government sectors, the public sectors, is that we have previously have federal mandate to enable IPv6 and internally and then externally.
Let me pull on thread. So I think what you're saying is when you're buying software packages or software now, that if it is not completely IPv6 ready, then you're going to have to upgrade once the network goes in that way in the future. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. And okay. On top of that, when we're talking about this is a Washington, and when we're talking about any companies doing any business with the federal government, we go back to December 2009, the FAR, the Federal Acquisition Regulation, and specifically dictate that the product services sold to the federal government has to be V6 compliant. And the NIST has a USG profile to help the companies to make sure that product and services are in compliance with that FAR mandate. And if you currently sell product and services to the federal government, ideally the procurement will check that your SDOC, the so-called suppliers declaration of compliance, that documentation clearly identify whether your service or product is in full compliance with IPv6 or not. If not, technically, the agency CIO have to sign a waiver to accept that as a risk.
Let's say we fast forward 8 years. We're 100% IPv6 across the board. What does the world look like? Are we able to have self-healing networks, and are we able to take our technology to the next level? What is, when IPv6 is fully implemented across the globe, what does the world look like for us?
That's a very good question. And as you know, Sean, it's always difficult, if not dangerous, to predict what the future looks like, especially in the
IT. Or brilliant.
In the IT arena. And what I can say is that obviously by that time, if we have disabled IPv4, the legacy internet protocol, worldwide we have more resources to concentrate on fully deploy the V6 to fully protect the only version of the internet protocol we have, which is required not just because of we are running out of IP address, it's because of the any new innovations in the technologies relying on the internet will have to use the internet to support the development and the deployment. Such the technology, emerging technologies such as IoT, the Internet of Things, or the smart cars, for example. I've been talking about IoT and IPv6 for quite a few years now. And sometimes people saying that we can do NATing. And that's why the network address transmission.
I was going to say, okay, yes.
And they delayed the demise of the IPv4. And now, initially, some IoT specialists or experts, when they're talking about deploying IoT, they may thinking we can use NATing to deploy that. I will say maybe if we're talking about smart buildings, you can still use NATing. Maybe to a large extent, if we stretch to the limit, saying that the smart cities may be able to use in IPv4 with the NATing. But just imagine that a smart car is running around the country doing NATing, translating every time when they reach different places. And not only is a nightmare, it can be very dangerous. Mm-hmm. So in other words, IPv6 is the only way to go to support the future. The future of the internet, the future of the emerging technology, the future innovations.
Do we have the workforce ready to support that network?
And training obviously is necessary. And from a network engineer perspective, IPv6 is no more different than any other new protocols. Obviously, necessary learning and training should be provided, but nowadays you can learn a whole lot of stuff from online and at home and even at work. So IPv6 in general is the only difference from the get-go is the format of the address schema is different than IPv4. It's very way complicated. So that has to, a hurdle have to come over and make sure that initial training is provided to the security personnel, to the network engineers. And you mentioned about a few years. Earlier I mentioned that Google has a worldwide IPv6 monitor. Based on that, there's a data set provided. Anybody can reach it. And using a different model, and by 2025, September, October 2025, according to one projection, we can reach 100% global adoption of IPv6.
No, Charles, I appreciate it. So, Charles, a little bit about you. What's on the horizon for Charles Sun?
Very good question, Sean. And as I mentioned earlier, since 2014, I've been promoting global adoptions of a single stack of IPv6. And
Yeah, that's obvious. Yes.
And I've been writing personal opinion articles initially published by Computer World saying no IPv4, stop using IPv4, and for a lot of reasons. Over the years, the focus gradually shift. And now I think it's more convincing to tell people that not because of all the necessities, it is given we are running out of IPv4 and you cannot get any IPv4 addresses. But yes, it's a challenge to have that to promote. It's a common sense. It's an issue that I'm very passionate about. I will continue to write personal opinion articles, promote and the global adoption of V6 to provide a secured environment, secured cyber infrastructure for the days to come.
Where can they find your papers?
I have. If you search my name and IPv6, you will find the first one or two pages will be related to my articles and information.
My guest today has been Mr. Charles Sun, government executive and IPv6 expert. I'm Sean Kelly. Thank you for listening. Keep up with the latest cybersecurity news at cyberchatnews.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Kelly. We will see you next time. Thank you, everyone.
You've been listening to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Tune in Friday mornings at 10:30 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.